Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Jake Shepherd is a founder and director of Synthesis Software Technologies. Very good morning to you, Jake. How are you?
Good morning, Howard, and good morning, Zanati.
Morning,
this Jake. Nice, fresh morning.
Yeah, it is a bit, maybe a little too fresh, maybe. We were doing so well. But no, but you know what? Spring can be unstable. There's a little bit of a glitch here or there. We'll get back to nice weather by Sunday, I'm sure.
For sure. You can always get luckier, right?
Exactly. Exactly. So tell us about this concept of luck, because I always find it so interesting how at times we're so fatalistic and we just accept, or maybe that's just how we deal with stuff. And other times we say the harder you work, the luckier you get. Who said that? Somebody said that. Gary Player.
Yeah, I was going to say 100%. Barack Obama, but okay.
Of course you would say Barack Obama. And if he did say, he just copied Gary Player.
Yeah, so I think we all know, I mean, that luck has the power to transform, transform a life. You know, a few seconds of good luck can really bring success and really, in some cases, even lasting happiness. So luck sort of seems to have the power, I suppose, to turn the improbable into the possible. And luck, I don't know how much thought you've given it, but, until recently, I'd never really given it much thought. My general impression was always that luck was this sort of like supernatural attribute that a person possessed. And that attribute like predisposed them to positive experiences. Mm. And we talk about it that way. We'll talk about external factors like lady luck, or that some people are just born lucky. Lucky face, or that you're in possession of a lucky charm like a rabbit's foot. But I think what you referred to earlier in terms of Gary Player is another view of luck, which is where we actually play an intimate role in luck. So Seneca, the Roman Stoic philosopher, said that luck is what happens when preparation meets opportunity. And obviously what Gary Player said in terms of the more you practice, the luckier you get is an echoing of that sentiment. And I recently came across a book called The Luck Factor by Richard Wiseman. And he explored this whole concept of luck from a scientific perspective. And I was really intrigued. Here's somebody who spent 8 years of his life, and maybe even longer, researching and explaining exactly what luck is. And obviously, just to start off, I want to just point out that it's important to realize that good and bad things happen to us, and it's often outside of our control. We didn't cause it to happen. But really what Wiseman looks at and what he points out is those people who consider themselves to be lucky have a lot of things in common. And I think it's important to note that his research, primary research, looks at people who consider themselves to be lucky or unlucky. He doesn't try and create an objective measure of luck itself. And this is actually quite an important decision because some people really do have bad things happen to them in life. I mean, they fall ill, they get injured. And I don't want Richard Wiseman's research to be looked at as something that's construed as victim blaming, because it really isn't.
Right, right. Yeah, and I do think because there are circumstances that just happen. And we're not talking about those.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
And I think, let's embrace the fact that the world is unpredictable. There's going to be a lot of stuff happening, and you're going to be confronted with countless opportunities and pitfalls every single day of our lives. And I think the key to living a life blessed with luck is to realize that we can't control the world, but we can control how we perceive it and how we react to it. So, I mean, you can think of an example of two people being in a motor car accident. And the one person, and they interpret this totally different. One person says, can't believe how unlucky I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. And the other person says, can't believe how lucky he was that he came out of the accident unscathed.
So
it's the same thing, but you just perceive it differently.
Right.
And so what Professor Wiseman actually did is he did a lot of self-reporting where he divided up people into those who consider themselves to be especially lucky and those who are, let's say, unlucky. And he did a whole bunch of interesting studies with these people. So some of the studies he did, which is fascinating, is he littered some money around the streets where he knew the people he was testing were going to be walking. And the lucky people tended to see the money and pick it up, and the unlucky people didn't even see it. Another that's like example.
That is so interesting. So because you're just not open to it.
You're just not open to it, exactly. Mm. And then like, he also found that when he gave people difficult puzzles to do, and in some cases even impossible puzzles to do, people who thought themselves as lucky, they persevered and tried and tried and tried. And there was almost like no end to how long they were fed to try and solve this puzzle, whereas unlucky people tended to give up quite quickly on the difficult puzzle. He also had a fascinating experiment where he asked people to count the number of photographs in a newspaper. So you would actually have to page through the newspaper, mm-hmm. counting all the photographs, telling what the total was at the end. And on the second page, he had this big, like, giant notice that says, stop counting, there are 43 photos in this newspaper. And lucky people tended to see the notice, and unlucky people, they carried on counting. They were focused on getting the number of the count right. And so what all of these studies started showing is that people who consider themselves lucky actually have a whole bunch of things in common, and that these things often link to personality. So I'm actually quite interested in this whole concept of, the whole concept of personality traits. And in psychological trait theory, there's the concept of the big five personality traits. It's also known as the five factor model or the ocean model. And it really says that there's five primary elements to a personality. One is openness to experience. So you can think of it as like creativity or intelligence. You're willing to try something new. Conscientiousness, that means you're like industrious and you're very orderly and you work hard. Extroversion, and we know about those people enjoy meeting with other people, and their counterpart, I suppose, is the introversion aspect. And then you've got agreeableness. So people like, high in compassion, and they're very polite and they want to get on with other people. They care what other people think about them. And then you've got neuroticism, which has got like a bit of a bad rap, but really, it just sounds bad, but it's not what it means. It means you're hyper alert for stuff that can go wrong. And quite interestingly, what they found is that lucky people tended to be high in extroversion, low in neuroticism, and more open to new experiences. And then unlucky people were the opposite. They were more introverted, they were high in neuroticism, and they were less open. So what he realized is then that we could actually, if we understand that and we understand how different people react or how their different people behave, we could actually modify certain behaviors, and we could actually increase our chances of becoming lucky. And he basically laid out four principles, guiding principles that actually determine, and he like discovered these by actually through his research, what we can actually do to determine the amount of luck we experience in life. And the four things, it's actually quite obvious when you think about it. The first is to, increase the number of opportunities we have to be lucky, and then listen to our gut feelings, and then expect to be lucky. And then the fourth thing is, you can transform the bad luck that you have in your life into good luck. And in terms of increasing the number of opportunities to be lucky, there's an old saying that says before the lottery ticket won the jackpot, somebody had to buy it. So you have to open yourself up to these new experiences. And our personality then has a huge influence on how many of these chance opportunities we have in life. So it's almost as if it is a bit fatalistic in the sense there are some lucky personalities and unlucky personalities. But I think the good news is to realize is that we can model ourselves on the behavioral patterns of people who experience better luck. And we can adapt. In other words, you can change your personality to some extent. There's some flexibility in that. And what you can try and do is you can try and, let's say, broaden your social network. I suppose also relax. You want to be able to find that.
I just want to go back to that one concept of that you spoke about of neuroses, because I think the rest we kind of get, because being agreeable, being a bit of more of an extrovert. What were the other points?
Agreeableness actually doesn't really actually impact. So the amount that you are agreeable or not doesn't really impact in your luck. Interestingly enough, so it was that and actually conscientiousness. didn't really impact. But what did impact was extroversion, obviously, because then you've got a great social network. You can tap into people. You know, if there's a stranger sitting on the plane next to you, you know, and you strike up a conversation with them, you might actually get some great advice, or you might find an investor willing to fund your startup idea.
Absolutely.
But you won't know if you don't speak to them.
I always think about that. The opportunities missed when you could, and I do believe this, that everybody's placed in front of us for a reason. And it doesn't mean a reason as to get something out of it. It might be for us to be assisting with them in a way that,
sure,
that we can. It's not a reason as in for gain. But I do believe that every single person that comes across, that we come across, is placed in front of us, with purpose. I think you really can.
I think that's a very lucky way of looking at the world, Howard. Because what you're saying is that there's this excitement out there.
Absolutely.
That person there, let me engage with them because I don't know what gift they have for me.
Right. It's just not easy to travel with me. It drives my family completely mad.
I have no doubt.
because I just meet the most wonderful, wonderful people along the way and we land up being in contact for years and years.
I'd be so annoyed.
I know I am that annoying person on the plane, but I'm not really because I can read it if somebody doesn't want to engage.
So I think, Howard, like the advice for fellow introverts, because I'm an introvert, okay? So for my fellow introverts, my advice is maybe have a look at Howard Feldman a little bit. Just seriously, have a look at your body language and the sort of the nonverbal messages that you send out. So whenever you meet somebody new, there you are smiling. I mean, you're smiling at them. You've got a very open and engaging stance. You know, it's the opposite of like a closed or defensive stance that discourages interaction. Right. So that's exactly it. You look at extroverted people and you say, well, why do they find it so easy to strike up a conversation? Well, look at what they do. Look at their tactics. Look at their strategies. And those you can adopt. So even if you're introverted, you can adopt those strategies and you can learn to actually be more extroverted. And I think in the same thing in terms of, if you suffer from neuroticism and you have a lot of anxiety and you're not being able to relax, let's say, it means that, so one way you could try and do it is try and just adopt more of a childlike wonder of the world. You know, don't try and approach the world with so much prejudice and expectation of what it has, you know, what's lurking around that next corner. And try and actually look at it through the eyes of a child experiencing something for the first time. And when you do that, you maximize your chance of spotting new opportunities because you haven't prejudged the situation. And you'll start seeing stuff that you weren't expecting. So I think that's one way of from a neuroticism, trying to relax and being a bit more open to the world.
Maybe what I could add to that is don't overthink things. You know, I think that what maybe an introvert, and I can't speak for introverts, but maybe what holds people back is maybe I shouldn't, what will they think and what can they do? I mean, I remember my wife and I were at an airport, we were in Zurich and I looked across, and we was waiting for the player to board, but it was quiet. We had some time and there was a woman sitting, an older woman sitting and crying. And I felt that if I can't stand by sort of and ignore that. She was just sitting by herself. But then I felt that sort of as a man, maybe it wasn't an appropriate thing for me to go up to her. So I said to my wife, who is an introvert, don't you want to say, don't you want to just see if this woman's all right? I don't know. It was just bothering me. And she said, but what happens if she's, doesn't want to speak and maybe she just wants to be left alone? And there was all this thing. And I said, you'll know in seconds if she does, but there can be no harm in going up to somebody and saying, you know what? You seem really upset. Would you like me to get you a bottle of water? So make it about an action. And that's what she did. And she went up to this woman and it turned out, and it was the most bizarre thing, because this woman was crying because she had just got news from somewhere in South America that at home that her cat had died. And the initial response immediately was, oh, for goodness sake. But then when she started telling my wife the story, her cats were almost like her children. She was an older woman. She had never had children. And it became such an important moment to actually appreciate what other people are going through. I have no doubt that this woman felt better afterwards, and everybody was enriched from the experience, and that's all that was.
Do you know what? Do you know what holds people back? Thinking that nervousness and just, you know, that feeling of being uncomfortable is not part of the process. So I hear you guys saying, relax, don't overthink it.
Just do it.
The truth of the matter is you will be nervous. You will be uncomfortable. And that's how everybody starts. I'm in the public eye, but I mean, if I'm in a place where there are people that I don't know, but I have to network, I'm very nervous. But you really do need to take that first step to actually go to people, and you will relax into it. The relaxation is not the first feeling that you will experience.
Yeah.
So I'll echo that advice and just say that, like, when it comes to something like a new opportunity, instead of saying, why should I do it? Rather say, is there a reason not to do it? In other words, when it comes to new opportunities, make yes your default answer. And then if you really want to then find a reason to say no, but really turn it around and make yes your default answer, and then say, well, is there a reason I shouldn't do it? Mm. And I think that way of thinking of the world will just open you up to a lot more new opportunities, because you don't know where they're going to lead. And the second principle is listening to your gut. You know, what he found is that lucky people tend to trust their intuition when they make, like, important decisions. And then unlucky people tend to ignore or squash their gut feelings. So you find that unlucky people tend to, like, stay in bad relationships or go into a bad business, even when there were a lot of red flags right at the beginning. Like, the gut was telling them, don't do this. They, like, overrode it. And lucky people tend to really understand or listen to the intuition. And if you think about it, so why is your intuition then so powerful? And I think the reason is because, you know, our mind is huge. Our conscious mind is actually quite small. It's almost, you can think of it as like almost a little raft floating on this massive unconscious ocean that is the rest of our mind. And the way that this whole unconscious mind speaks to us is through, like, some sort of emotional, like, messaging. So you need to actually become quite aware of what's going on emotionally. So you need to maybe spend a bit of time, in mindfulness or in meditation, and just becoming a bit more aware to your body and to what your emotions are saying to you, and then tapping into that. And the reason is because we've got a massive amount of, like, our brain capacity isn't just what's in our head. It's actually our spinal cord. It's actually in our solar plexus. It's all over the place. We're an embodied intelligence. It's not just in one tiny place. And even much of that isn't even conscious. So we need to actually tap in, and that part of our mind is, like, aware of patterns, and it picks up on patterns much faster than our conscious mind does. So by listening to our intuition, we really tap into something deep and powerful. And obviously I'm aware of unconscious bias as well that comes in because of this. So you can't just, like, blindly trust your intuition, but it doesn't mean don't blindly discount and not trust your intuition as well. It can give you a lot of very valuable information.
Absolutely right. Jake Shepherd, unfortunately, we do have to leave it there. It is 8:55.